surprise adoption. There were four people or groups of people who were surprised at Christmas time. The first people surprised at Christmas time were the shepherds. I've tried to get Christmas cards that we've been sent of each of these, and I've certainly got one of shepherds. Actually, they're rather more modern shepherds in snow in the UK. Why were they surprised? Why were they surprised? Go on. I'm sure someone said something. Bless you, my brother. They were surprised by, go on. Yeah, that's right. Just because you now know that I've taught at Spurgeon's College and worked for 30 years on a Bible, it means that I do love the Bible and I've, you know, looked at every word again and again. And in that story of the shepherds being surprised, there are three things that happen that we all put together. We sing while shepherds watch their flocks by night and so on. The first thing that happened was there was an angel, which they obviously didn't see every night. The second thing was the Shekinah glory of the Lord shone around. The glory of the Lord shone around. Now, I don't think when we sing that we get any idea of what it's like. But that wasn't, oh, that's interesting, there's some light, do you see? Oh, I wonder what that is. The Shekinah glory is like the glory that Isaiah saw, that John saw on Patmos. It's the sort of glory that just you feel is going to burn you up. And the third surprise they had, of course, was that there was a multitude then, after that, of the heavenly host praising God. So they were surprised, they were interrupted, it had never happened before, and the other surprise was they were told that the reason all this is happening, because a king is born, the Messiah, if you like, the King of Kings. Well, okay. I'll put on a regional accent just for a moment. Okay, but how are we going to recognize him, all right? Please don't say that's my attempt to be Gujarati or, you know, Kenyan, all right? Well, you're going to recognize him because you'll find this King of Kings lying in a manger. Just a minute, stone the crows in a manger? That's sheep fodder. Well, you're going to find the King of Kings lying in a manger. That was such a surprise, they went. And when they'd gone and found the baby lying in a manger, they went and told everyone. And one of the reasons we're here this morning is because the shepherds started telling people. The second group of people who were surprised, if I hold up a card, I think probably those of you in the front row can recognize who they are. The other people surprised at Christmas? Who said that? Who said wise men? Good. Look, this isn't a smarty quiz, but I'm just... to have life in the musicians at this stage... Oh, sorry, I thought you were waving your hand. That was actually your... Yep, that's right. Not quite sure what you call those things that waggle. Are they wings? Are they antlers? What are they? Okay, thank you. We'll find out. Angels, someone say. Okay. The wise men. So they were surprised. You know that. You're not surprised to know. They were surprised because something had happened. It's difficult to know what it was. If you go to the planetarium and you study, go to Wikipedia, you find that always people say, we're not sure whether it was one star, whether it was the star in a different place, whether it was moving, whether it was a constellation, whether it was a meteor, whether it was a comet. But basically, something happened in the heavens to do with the stars, and they knew they had to follow a particular star all the way. And they found the star led them to Jesus. So they were surprised because, as far as we know, for the first time in their lives, they had to leave their home and to travel west from the east. We don't know how far they came from, of course, and some have said Persia, possibly Iran. Now, the third person who was surprised does not have a Christmas card dedicated to him. Can anyone think who this person is? Surprised at Christmas. Doesn't have a Christmas card. Yes? I'm hearing the right word, but it's not coming from the right place. What do you say? Herod! Come on, get another smarty, will you? This wasn't meant to be a smarty quiz, but I have spare ones, and so this is just getting better and better. Would you like to preach any more sermon, or are you happy at the moment? Okay, very good. No, thank you. No, thank you very, very much for... That's good. Just something, if I might... I'm sorry, I don't want to be destabilized by having a Spurgeon student here, but something that was my joy since 1978, when Raymond Brown, not J.J. Brown, he was also there, but when he invited me to become part of the faculty, something I found was I used to go early in the morning and then come back at night. And I was never surprised in the lecture room by questions from the students. Never surprised, because they were always predictable. Some were even quite clever, occasionally. But when I got back home and we opened the Bible at the meal table, the children's questions always, not always, but very often, surprised me, and their insights. I just want to say that, because I've got used to the fact I'm not surprised when children have got further than I have with their questions. Right. Herod. This year, so he was surprised because he got some visitors who said, where is this new king, king of the Jews? Now, Herod was king of the Jews, and put yourself in his shoes. Just think. Think of different parts of Africa, for example, and think there is someone who is the king or the tribal leader, and then someone comes to the king or the tribal leader or the president and says, we've heard that there's someone come to take your place. Where is he? Now, I put it to you that most kings would be a little disturbed by that. And Herod was. This year, in Frontier Youth Trust, I don't know if you've heard of it, but for a mission to those who are urban children and those and young people. This year, on our website, Frontier Youth Trust, we were asked, would we take on a role in the story and write or do something in that role? And I chose Herod. So I thought I'd try and get into Herod. And I tell you, that was a bit of a surprise, because the more I thought of myself as Herod, the more I thought, this is a terrible threat. It's an existential threat. If this really is a king of the Jews, then my days are numbered. So there we are. And I then argued that killing a few boys wasn't too bad, because I killed a lot of people anyway. And then I imagined what it was like if later on in the next life I heard that this man had been crucified by the Romans. Oh, that's good. So someone got rid of him. All right? This is Herod imagining what it was like, hearing later on. Yeah, but there's some bad news, they said, for you, because he is king of the Jews forever and for all people. He did take your place, for he's the king of kings. And in the end of my story, Herod says, well, not my sort of king. Because he seemed to be a weak king who loved the poor and the outsiders and didn't worry about racial purity and so on. He seemed to be a king for everyone. And Herod concludes, not my sort of king. There we are. The other person who was surprised, of course, was Joseph. Now, I've got a card here of the nativity scene. Now, look, for those of you musicians, okay, who do you think sent me that card? All right, can you have a look here? What was their profession? Yep. What did you say? Keep going. Right, get ready. It was a bishop. The Bishop of Durham. Okay, there we are. He sent this card to me. That was a bit of a surprise, really, because it didn't look like a Bishop of Durham type card. There we are. But there we are. He didn't go to Spurgeon's, by the way. So, yeah. So this card is a card where in the middle of it is Joseph and Mary. There are other cards, by the way, more conventional Joseph and Mary ones. And Joseph, of course, was surprised because he got the news that he was going to be a father long before he thought he'd be a father. He was going to be a stepfather. And he was to adopt, if you like, adopt Jesus. Right, four surprises. at Christmas time. You with me? The shepherds were surprised, the wise men were surprised, Herod was surprised, and Joseph was surprised. Okay? That's a bonus for a Baptist church, isn't it? A four-point sermon. Okay? There we are. But there is a surprise for us this morning, and it's going to come to you, possibly as more of a surprise than you knew. Because the message of the Gospels is that you and I are invited to become part of this story. And the way we become part of this story is by adoption. This is the message of Christmas. And in a person's life, there comes a time, and it may be this morning, the time is absolutely ripe. The time is right for you to realize that you are part of the story. It could be this morning. Last week I was preaching at Bernardo's at their annual carol service. And in the process I was preaching about being born again. Someone came up to me afterwards and said, "You were talking about Billy Graham." And I said, "No, I wasn't. I was talking about being born again." He said, "Well, that is Billy Graham." Okay, very good. He then said, he was dressed as a snowman, by the way, with a big carrot sticking out of his chest. And he said, "In June 1966, I was taken by the minister of Claybury Park Baptist Church, as it then was, to the Billy Graham campaign. And he said it did nothing for me. A week later," he was more precise, "on the 15th of June," I said, "that's near the World Cup, 1966, I went again. And that time," he said, "it was different. Because it was for me." Isn't that special? I went twice. And the first time, he said, I understood. Everything he said was what they used to say at church, at Sunday school. Billy Graham didn't say anything new. But the next week, the 15th of June, I knew it was for me. Now, my dear sisters and brothers, it's just possible this morning there will be one of you for whom this morning is the time when you come to discover this is actually for you. It's not something of the head. It's something that God does so that we know the time is right. He wants you, yep, okay. No hiding. He wants you to become part of his family. Yes, his royal family. And let me go further. He wants you to know that you're brothers and sisters of Jesus. And he wants to do this by adopting us. Those aren't my words. They're the words from the Bible. John tells us that when we welcome Jesus into our lives, our hearts, and believe in his name, then we have the right, oh my, that's a right, to be called children of God. I want to tell you a story before I close. The most precious Christmas present I have this Christmas, I will ever have, is this. I've just received it, and it is a certificate of naturalization as a British citizen. For over 50 years ago, we took into our family a little boy at Millgrove. He was one of four. He was the baby. Never occurred to us all those years ago, 50 years ago, that he didn't have citizenship. Nowadays, we're all aware of citizenship. What is your nationality? If you're not, you will be. There came the time, 50 years later, it just happened that he had no state, no citizenship. Just, I ought to tell you why. He was born in Germany on an Air Force base and abandoned by his parents. And then a German doctor brought him to the UK trying to find his mother, found his mother, and then she abandoned him at a railway station. And if you have that sequence, that's how then he came to us. And if you have that sequence of events, if you happen to be abandoned in Germany with a German birth certificate, I'm not wanting to be too technical this morning, but then you come to Britain and you're abandoned in Britain and you've got no idea who your dad is, then you're going to have great difficulty making a case for citizenship. Anyway, his older sister, who's training to be a family psychotherapist with the Tavistock Clinic, she contacted me and said, look, my baby brother, 50-year-old baby brother, but always a baby brother, he needs help because he can't legally get digs, he can't legally get a job. He can get sort of some jobs, but not a legal one. So he came back home. I helped him to move back from Chadwell Heath back to Milgrove. And I promised him 3 years ago, I said, Frank, I will not rest until you are proved to be one of my family. What I mean is that you are a British citizen. Now, he already supported Spurs, so in my view, the case was a very, you know, easy one. I'm not going to say any more about that, but afterwards, if you want to come back at me, if you happen to have the misfortune of being an Arsenal supporter, come and see me. But I had no idea how deep the waters would be or how dark the nights would be as I tried to argue his case for citizenship. Sat with the MP. And I said, this is my boy. Went to one of the highest legal authorities in the land I could and said, look, this is simple. He's either German or he's British, and he's not German, so what is he? And the lawyer said to me, Keith, this is very complicated. This will cost tens of thousands of pounds. And I said, I believe it's very simple. It's a silly thing to say to us. So anyway, there we are. And the heavens were as brass. I have a folder of letters of things that we've sent to everyone, to the Home Secretary, who earlier on was someone called Theresa May, and right the way through. And then something happened this year called Windrush. Soon as it happened, I said to those of us who were trying to help, I said, stop everything you're doing, find the number you're supposed to call, and call that number, and keep on calling, because this will only last for about a week, because then they'll forget Windrush. And I heard someone on the online say, hello, can I help you? This was a government official. And I was so moved, I had to get my handkerchief out and said, excuse me, are you being serious? Yes, I'm here to help. And I needed to sit down with a cup of tea, because after 3 years, no one cared. And my friends, in that process, I got into my adoptive son's. I got into his life, and I saw that he was a nobody. Nobody wanted him. Nobody cared. And then through Windrush and through lots and lots of effort on behalf of others in the Milgrove family, this Christmas, we've got the news that he at last is somebody. 53 years old, and now he's somebody. Now, as far as I was concerned, he always was my boy. But now he's got this. With that in mind, Paul says, when the time was ripe, God sent his son, born of a woman, born under the law, so that he might redeem us and we might receive adoption as his sons. That's in Galatians. But he went on further in Romans to say, we've not received a spirit of slavery so that we fear. We've received a spirit of adoption as sons. So when the Spirit works in us, we can say, Abba. That's special. Because it's one thing to say Father, or if you went to Eton, Peter. It's one thing to say Father, but it's another thing to say Abba, Daddy, or Pa. Isn't it? It's another thing. And my friends, this morning, it's not... that you simply come and get a certificate saying, I am now naturalized into God's family, I am now a citizen of God's family. It's something different. It's something that means we begin to realize that God is inviting us to come right beside him. He wants to put his arm around us. He wants to smile. He wants to hear us say, Daddy. When Jesus said pray, he said, when you pray, remember this, don't you? Say Our Father. And I think the Spirit is wanting to say, when you pray, say Daddy, Dad. Now that may be too familiar for you, that's all right. But the truth is that because of Christmas, the surprise of Joseph, we are able to say Our Father. Millgrove is a big family, and so I end with one final story, and that's the person I'm talking about. Okay? The title of the book is Somebody's Son. This person, who I grew up with, was abandoned at birth. I'm afraid to say, Millgrove knows quite a bit about abandonment at birth, and it doesn't get any easier. I get more and more hurt when I hear the stories of those who are abandoned. Anyway, he had no idea who he was. He had no idea who his mother was or who his father was. He had no idea why he was called Beverly, which he thought was a girl's name. He had no idea when his surname started changing. So at one stage it was Fletcher, then it was Savage, then it went back to Fletcher. He was completely confused. He came to Millgrove, came to live with us. I didn't know this because I was a boy growing up with him, but he really felt a nobody. He didn't seem to me a nobody, but he felt a nobody because he didn't know who he was. And then he heard an auntie of mine, Auntie Jean, talk to him about Hagar and Ishmael. I tell you the true story, that's what it was. And how God said, you are being rejected, you're being abandoned, but I haven't abandoned you. And through that story, he came to discover that God loved him, that he was somebody's child. He was a child of God. Before he knew who he was on earth, he knew he was a child of God. I find that very moving. Years later, he froze all this. He froze it. He became a minister, a church in Plumstead, then a church, Lansdowne Road Baptist Church in Bournemouth, then a church in Chicago. He's a wonderful preacher and pastor. His wife started, at the insistence of his grandchildren, finding out who he was. And eventually, before she died, she was able to get his family tree together. And just before she died, they found his mother. She just about was able to understand what was going on. She was in an old people's home. It turned out she was a head teacher. What about father? Mother was going to say nothing about father, but then he discovered that his father was actually from Jamaica. He was Caribbean. And that he'd spent some time in his life living in the same house as his father. But he commented this: that man was so awful that I'm so grateful I didn't know he was actually my dad. That's how bad it was. But my friends, the wonderful story this morning is that he and I were exchanging emails before I was coming to you this morning, and he rejoices at Christmas time that he knew, before he knew who he was on earth, that he was a child of God. In a moment I'm going to pray a prayer, and if it's a prayer that for you it's the first time you've prayed with all your heart, soul, mind and strength, then just pray it, because it may be that God by his Spirit is preparing you. By the way, one of the things he discovered was that his grandfather was mayor of the city of Cambridge twice, that he was a renowned politician and orator. And I want to say this to you, that I'm eternally grateful to Bev because he was an orator. And when he was about 13 or 14, he was asked to read the scriptures in a Baptist church, Woodford Baptist Church. And I saw him go up the stairs into the pulpit, because in those days you had pulpits. And he was supposed to read Romans 8, but he didn't read it. He recited it from the Authorized Version. As a boy, I was looking at him in the pulpit, thinking, how can someone so young do this? But the words spoke to me. What can separate us from the love of God in Christ? Can tribulation, or famine, or sword? I am convinced there is nothing in all creation that can separate us from God's love. And that day, the time was right, because he was the means of me discovering that I was a child of God. and nothing could separate me from God's love. So I give thanks to the Lord for Bev.